Welcome back to the West Side Discussion Podcast, the first and only podcast dedicated to West Side Discs. My name is Jay. Thanks for listening. This is episode 20. Today I'm joined by three-time world champion Tim Keith. This is Tim's second year on Team West Side Discs. Tim, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
Oh, doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks for coming on. And so as I said in the intro, you just finished your three-peat, three world championships in the MP60. And we'll get to that in a minute, but let's just step back a little bit and start from the beginning. How did you get into disc golf?
Disc golf, how did I get into it? Gosh. Actually, my first true love of disc sports was Ultimate. I played Ultimate for 28 years, but I always just kind of played disc golf for fun. Never really played tournaments, but I got into it, and I actually played my first round of disc golf in 1975. So,
oh wow,
we used to a friend of mine actually went to California, Kevin White, and he was happened to be at the Rose Bowl when the big world championship thing was going on with Ultimate and disc golf and MTA and all that distance, you know, the all around stuff, and he was just mesmerized by it. And he brought it back to Birmingham and actually got on one of our local radio stations and said, made an announcement saying, hey, I'm starting a Frisbee club. Does anybody wants to be part of this Frisbee club, show up at UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham. They had a big intramural field. They said, show up here, you know, and that's where it all started for me. It's 1975 when he went over there and saw that, but we started mainly playing Ultimate, but he knew about disc golf too from being over there, and then we started just taking our lids, our Ultimate disc, and throwing them at objects. We made object courses, but then in 1976, I actually played my first real round of disc golf in Huntsville, Alabama at Bronze Springs. They got their first course in up there. So actually my first baskets that I played on were in 1976. And of course then, you still didn't have many actually real golf discs. We were just using our lids and 141s and 150 molds. But that's where it all began for me back then. And Tom Monroe, most people do not know who Tom Monroe is. He is another big influential person that got me into disc golf. But that's where it all began for me. Just one buddy going out to California and bringing the Frisbee sport back here, and that's where it all began. And I've never looked back. But I actually started competing in tournaments in '99. It was my first year to play in a tournament. I think I played maybe two tournaments in '99, and then 2000, I really began my career in disc golf. I was still playing Ultimate too, but playing disc golf as well. But I played one amateur event in '99 just to gauge myself to see where I was going to fit in, because I had no idea, because I was just a big Ultimate player.
Right.
And I won that tournament, and I looked at the pro open division, and I would have finished second. And I said, you know what? I'd rather play for money. So I've played pretty much open pro, the pro division, my whole life, except for that one tournament. So.
Except for that one. So yeah. You started playing Ultimate. So you're kind of playing a mix of Ultimate and disc golf since 76 to 99? Or was it mainly just Ultimate?
No, I quit playing Ultimate in probably 2007 competitively, and I was just playing a lot of summer league stuff around here and winter league, but just for fun. But I quit competitively playing Ultimate and started focusing on my disc golf. So
at what point, you said there wasn't a lot of courses in that area, of course, when you first started. At what point did you see the courses kind of start picking up?
Yeah, we had no courses here until 86. George Ward Park was our first course we had here in town, the one and only course. And that was Joe Thacker, another good buddy of mine, was instrumental in getting that course in, which is still one of the most popular courses around here because it's right by UAB's campus, University of Alabama, Birmingham, so it gets tons of people out there playing. that was the only course we had forever. But now, God, I actually live in Trussville, Alabama, which is just like 15 minutes north of Birmingham. And I actually work for the Trussville Park and Recreation Department, and I've installed two courses here in Trussville. And then we have just up the road, we got another course at Clay, and then Inverness, which is our big monster wooded course, which is just a little bit south of Birmingham. So just within the Birmingham and surrounding areas, we got 8 or 9 courses to play now.
Okay, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it's really grown. There's so many people playing now.
So you had a lot of practice years in there from when you first started to your first tournament, you know, in 2000. You said 2000 was your first tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't join the PDJ until 99, that year, 99. So, yeah, and really started going and playing tournaments in 2000 when I really started being more serious about disc golf and not ultimate.
So did you have to travel around a lot to get the tournaments? Was there any in your area?
Yeah, you know, we have our local tournaments. We always had tournaments here in Birmingham. Once we got the George Ward course in, we always had little tournaments there. And then, of course, travel up to Huntsville to play. And then, you know, and then just all the southeastern states is where I pretty much traveled mainly. I didn't really go venture out too far. So I mainly stayed in the southeast playing. I don't even remember the furthest I traveled back then. Maybe Bowling Green, Kentucky. It was about the furthest I went. Until I really didn't start venturing out very far until probably 2006, 7, 8. So it worked out. I had the opportunity because of my job. I had to travel with work. So it always worked out that I would work it out before I could play a tournament that weekend before I came home. So that's when I really started getting to go out to Kansas City and places like that, and we'd get to go out to the Memorial in Phoenix for the first of the year, and Emporia. That was lucky. If it wasn't for my job, I wouldn't have been able to travel and play as much as I did back then, like between 2007 and 2010. So I got to travel a pretty good amount.
Well, that'd be very convenient.
Yeah, it worked out good.
That's awesome. So at what point did you start getting sponsored?
I got sponsored by Gateway, I think it was 2005, maybe, for a couple of years. They picked me up, I played with them, and then I happened to be out at the Memorial in 2007 in Phoenix, back when it was a national tour event, mm-hmm. And Ron Sullivan from Discraft approached me and asked me would I be interested in being sponsored by Discraft, and of course that was an easy answer, you know. So heck yeah, man, because I had another buddy of mine that was on there, Larry Bledsoe. Well, he's the one that actually put in a good word for me. So yeah, from at that point on, I was Discraft until 2019.
So back in 2007, then, what was sponsorship like with Discraft?
You know, I was on the, they had the Masters team, so I was on the Masters squad, and it was pretty much a lot like anywhere else. You know, if you're on the Masters team or something, you know, you'd get your allotment of disc and clothing, and, you know, get your bonuses from wherever you finished in tournaments. That's pretty much about it.
All right.
Free apparel, free disc, and your bonuses, depending on where you place it. And, you know, what events you played in. You know, obviously the bigger tier events, you get a bigger bonus.
So you were with Discraft for quite a while then. What brought you to come over to Westside?
Well, Discraft let me go in 2019. They kind of disbanded the Masters team. They wanted to cater more to just the open players, so, which that's understandable. It's a young man's game.
So how did you get connected with Westside?
Well, Ben Swam is a great friend of mine here in town, and he was big into Dynamic Disc. You know, he was sponsored by Dynamic Disc, and they also, you know, we have some brick and mortars here in town, Dynamic Disc Iron City, which he's affiliated with, and of course he put in a good word for him. He said, hey, y'all need to check this guy out, you know. And I guess in 2021, you know, I won my first world championship. I was unsponsored. I was just throwing a mixed bag. And then in the end of 21, they contacted me. Gabe contacted me, and I got an email from Gabe saying, you know, would you be interested in being part of Team Westside? And I'm sitting here thinking, you know what? Somebody trying to scam me and get information off of me. I'm like, you know how it is on the internet and emails and stuff. And of course, I called, got the number and called, and I said, hey, man, I got this email. And I'm just trying to make sure it's not bogus. And he goes, oh, man, yeah, we would love to have you on the team. And I'm like, sweet, dude, I appreciate that. I appreciate you thinking about us old guys and giving us a chance.
Yeah, so what year did Discraft disband the Masters team?
Like the end of 2019. I just got a random email saying, you know, we no longer want you. We're not going to renew your contract.
So you weren't with Discraft then when you won MP60 World Champion?
No, my first year, my first World Championship, I was independent. I wasn't sponsored by anybody.
So what was in your bag then that year?
Well, I mean, when they dumped me, obviously I was pissed off. And I took every Discraft disc out of my bag, you know, and just started filling it with Trilogy stuff, you know, because Ben, you know, I was telling him, you know, they dumped me, and he goes, well, here, you know, try this, you know, I'm trying to replace everything I threw, and he's like, well, try this, and he gave me a big stack of stuff, and I just stuck in my bag and started trying to play tournaments, not really knowing what the discs were going to do, I wasn't doing very well, and that's when I knew I was going to Worlds. I said, well, you know what? If you're going to be competitive, you got to throw what you know. So I put some Discraft discs back in my bag, and mainly just my mid ranges, the Buzz, the Comet, and my Meteor. Those are my three big mid ranges that I threw a lot for them. But other than that, the Sword was my number one disc driver in my bag. I love the Sword. That's still my number one driver. But I had the Sword and a Nuke and an Avenger. And that's about all I had in my bag as far as Discraft. Everything else was either Westside or Dynamic Disc or Latitude.
I didn't realize that you were unsponsored the first time you won.
Yeah, I was. Boy, and I wanted to say some ugly things when I accepted that, but I didn't. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, now that you kind of mentioned it, one of the biggest questions that pops up a lot on different, you know, disc golf forums, like on Facebook and stuff, is people saying, hey, I want to fill my bag with this brand. What disc replaces this? So what disc did you find to replace your Buzz? You said you threw the Buzz. What replaced that for you?
I throw the Warship. Warship replaced my Buzz. The Bounty replaced my Comet. People that know me know I was a huge Comet guy, man. The Comet was my bread and butter disc, especially in the woods and stuff. So I got the Bounty to replace that, which I actually like better because it's a touch more stable than a Comet. So I can torque it a little harder and make it do things that I want it to do without really flipping over on me. Mm-hmm. Great disc. If you don't have a Bounty in your bag, it's a great disc. And also, the Meteor was another big bread and butter disc of mine, and I replaced it with the Fuse. Fuse is a great disc. But yeah, those three discs are instrumental in all my game, especially this past year's world, or this year's world. Man, that Fuse was so key up at elevation. Net thin air,
mm-hmm.
It was money.
All right.
So get yourself a Fuse if you're not throwing the Fuse.
You heard it here. Three-time world champion, can't be wrong. All right. So Westside then is 2021. Reached out to you, and then this is your second year then with Westside. And that brings us, so the, as I said, you know, the three-peat, three-time world champion. So Let's talk about that a little bit.
I know.
Bit.
Still hard for me to believe I did that, man. Like winning one's hard enough. I mean, I've been trying for so long. 2010, I finished second. 2013, I finished third. 2017, I think I finished third. It's just like been so close so many times. It's just, it finally happened. And now here I have strung three in a row together. It's just like unbelievable.
2021 was the first one, right?
We said. Correct. Yeah. In Johnson City.
All right, so 2021 was the first one. You were unsponsored. Was there any bit of, you know, like chip on your shoulder from the whole Discraft thing, or were you just going out there not even thinking about that?
Oh, I wanted to prove them wrong. Of course, I had a chip on my shoulder. I want to show them they screwed up when they let me go. So I was bound and determined. If I'm going to win one, I want to win this one just to prove them wrong.
That was one perfect.
And it did.
Awesome. And so then the next year you come back sponsored by Westside. How did that feel then coming in, you know, with the sponsorship behind you?
Oh, I was ecstatic just to be sponsored. You know, here I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm just going to be a mixed bagger the rest of my life. You know, nobody gave up on the old man, but Westside was gracious enough to give me a chance, and you know, I hope I made them proud of what I've done. Yeah, but it's nice knowing that somebody realizes that you have some talent and they want you to be part of their team and family, and I'm very grateful for that.
Did you still feel the same type of pressure from the year before, or was it a little bit easier with that?
You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, after you know people are saying, he won last year, so we got to get him this year. So I felt like I had a target on my back, like last year, and especially this year after winning two in a row. It's like, jeez, I know everybody's going to be gunning for me. So, but I don't know. I feel like, you know, me and Chris Villa, my teammate, we got there 6 days early to be able to get up there and acclimate to the altitude. It took me four days. It took 4 days to get used to the altitude and to figure out how your disc fly in that thin air. So that was key, having all that extra time to figure things out. Because there's no way. If I would have shown up 1 or 2 days before the tournament started, there's no way I would have won that tournament this year, because I wouldn't have been able to breathe. My head was so foggy and couldn't hardly breathe. And you're not knowing what you're doing. All my understable disc, my underworld, and my hatchet, and they're under. You know, I mean, down here in Birmingham, the Alabama, man, I'm left-handed and I throw. They just bail out left. They're understable, but up there they're stable. They were flying straight and hyzering out right. I'm like, whoa. But that's two other discs that were key in that victory too. The hatchet in my underworld and a super beat sword.
You mentioned getting there a few days early to practice. What's your typical tournament prep look like?
I mean, just a weekend tournament or something?
Yeah, just a regular tournament.
Yeah, I'll get there, you know. I mean, most of the – unless it's a course I haven't played, I'll try to get there a couple of days ahead of time to get some practice in on the course. You know, at least two days ahead of time. But if it's courses I've already played that I know, you know, I'll show up the day before, you know, and maybe get out there and just familiarize myself a little bit, not even play a whole round, but just to familiarize myself. But yeah, that's about it. Just try to, you know, try to eat right. I try to eat healthy and try to keep myself in good shape. I think I do a lot of cycling too. I used to race bikes also, so I still do a lot of cycling, and I think that's a big part of my game too, is having my cardio, and my legs are strong. So coming down the stretch on those long weekends or like Worlds, those last couple of days, I feel like that plays a big factor into my game. Coming still feeling good when I think a lot of guys are come down the stretch struggling some. So I try to stay in shape, because that's the only way to keep your game up, especially the older you get.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. You know, there's one thing about when I started playing disc golf for a little while. I knew I, you know, found something I want to play for the rest of my life. So it's always encouraging to see like the MP60s and the 70s out there. So that's good advice.
Yeah, it's key, man. I think exercise is important no matter what age you're at. You know, even if you're the young guys, I mean, you still, those guys, they still go, they work out and go to the gym. I mean, that's what it takes to be competitive. You can't just go out and play. You gotta, it's not just, obviously it's way more serious now. I mean, people train, they have guys that train them. I mean, it's a big part of the game. You know, it used to be you just grab your disc and go out and play. But now if you want to be competitive, you got to do that extra work to make yourself a better golfer besides just going out and playing.
Absolutely. So going back, you were talking about, you know, that third championship, felt that pressure there. How do you handle pressure during a tournament?
Heck, I've been playing, 23 years. But, you know, I still get nervous when I get up there on the tee the first few holes, especially in Worlds and big events like that. I mean, I definitely get the butterflies, but you know, maybe after first two or three holes, I just kind of calm down. I think I don't get super psyched out because I guess I've been doing it so long. You know, I'm just kind of used to it. And I just have to, you know, I just keep telling myself, hey, man, this is, we're out here just having fun. You know, just enjoy it. Enjoy the scenery. Enjoy the people you're with. You know, this is not how I make my living. So, you know, don't beat yourself up. If you have a bad hole, you know, sure, I'll get upset for a minute or two. But then, you know, you just got to put it behind you and go on to the next hole. So I've always felt like that I've always been able to keep that in check pretty good and not let it get to me. So I think, I don't know, I guess just because I've been doing it so long, just comes like second nature, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like I say, I still get jitters, but after a few holes, I'm calmed down and I'm focused and I'm ready to go. You can't put that pressure on yourself or you're just going to, you know, every time you step up to make a 30-foot putt or 20-foot putt, it's like, oh my God, I got to make this. Just relax, you know, and just tell yourself, hey, that's another one of my big things. I just say, hey, this is just backyard putting, man. It's just no different than being in the backyard, sipping on a cold one and working on your putt in the backyard. Just do the same thing. That's my psyche, I guess. I try to do it for myself. So,
now, I love you say that. Because I practice in my backyard, and in my backyard there's a brick wall behind my basket, and that's what I tell myself. I just say backyard, and I envision that brick wall behind it, and so I just try to put it in, just like put myself back
that's
in
me.
There. So I'm glad you said that.
That's me. Just try not to put that pressure on yourself. Cause, hey, if you miss it, so what? You get on the next hole and just correct it on the next hole. You know.
Yep. Absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, riding bike and exercise, you know, to stay healthy and maintain that. But and you're practicing, you know, in your backyard. Is there anything else you're doing to continually improve your game?
I still go to the gym some and work out the gym, ride my bike, and I still get out and do field work. You know, that's my number one thing I'll tell any player, right? New, ever how long you've been playing, 10, 20 years, it don't matter. You got to get out and do field work. Just get out to the field. Don't go to the course. Just throw your disc, figure out what your discs are doing off the course, and once you figure out how they're flying, then when you step up to that hole, you say, okay, I know this disc will do this, so I'll take this. It applies to the hole. You know, you figure what your discs are doing. And once you know how your discs fly, you can step up to a hole and go, you know, hey, all right, I know that's exactly what this disc is going to do. Get this disc and throw it, and it should work. So, but that's my number one thing I tell any new player, especially. Go out to the field, figure out what your discs do before you ever go out to the course. Now, like I say, I still do it, and I've been throwing discs since 75. Sometimes, you know, because especially, you know, your discs age. you obviously know they start flying different. The more they get beat in, they start flying different. So you got to every now and then go out and, you know, get out and really torque them hard to see what they're going to do. So you can apply that to your game when you get to the course.
Hey folks, today it seems like everyone in disc golf is raising their prices, but Putt Confidently has just lowered their price. You can now get the Champ Cap Solo for only $29. I've been telling you about the Champ Cap for a few years and the improvement it's made with my putting, but I just recently got the Champ Cap Solo and I love it. The Champ Cap Solo is a 13-inch target hole that I put on my basket. It allows me to mix up my putting practice through variation because I can either putt through the 13-inch hole on the one side or turn the basket around and putt on an open basket. So whether you want to check out the Champ Cap Solo, the original Champ Cap, or any Putt Confidently apparel, use code WSDFS for free shipping at puttconfidently.com. WSDFS. I'll have all that information in the show notes. All right, so we had a brief technical difficulty. We're back here with, we got you back and running. And before we started recording, Tim, you were saying that you put the courses in before you start working for the city. Now you're getting paid to take care of them?
Yeah. I put the courses here in Trussell in, you know, 12 and 15 years ago before I actually started working for the Park and Recreation Department. You know, I was in the printing industry for 30 years, and of course that kind of went south with all the online printing and stuff you could get now. It's way cheaper. But luckily I knew David Vinson, the park director, and I said, I need a job. And he goes, you know what, just by chance we're looking for somebody. So yeah, now my Civitan Park runs along the river through, it's called Cahaba River, and we have a greenway that runs through there also, and they needed somebody to take care of that area. So now that's what I do, take care of the greenway, which is basically my disc golf course. So now I'm getting paid to take care of a course I put in. It's kind of worked out good.
Yeah, that's very cool. So before you had a job that traveled, that you played disc golf on the weekend at different tournaments. Now you got a job taking care of the disc golf course.
Yeah. It's not a bad gig. It's pretty low stress. No pressure. Just ride around out there on my morning, watch the disc golfers all day and stop and try to give them some tips and stuff. So, and I've gave away so many discs. It's just amazing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I've given away. I mean, especially, you know, like when COVID hit, there's so many people that were looking for a different outlet because they couldn't go to the gym and couldn't do their normal thing. So many people started coming out and trying to play disc golf, especially all these young kids. And, you know, there's like an elementary school right behind the course. So we've gotten to see a lot of these kids come over there and start playing and watch some of them. Some of them have grown up. I watched some of them grow up and become really good golfers, just like Sullivan Tipton now. I don't know if you know who he is. He's part of Team Discraft now, but he just played Ledgestone and finished 20th, tied for 20th. I mean, he's a really good player, and he's going to be do big things coming down the road, I believe. But there's guys like him coming out of here that are good. It amazes me to see some of these kids now, these young kids, how they're taken to it and just how far they can throw these discs. So amazing.
Yeah. So you've been playing for a while. What are some of the main changes you've seen with disc golf?
Oh, man. Just a lot of lot more disc companies. You know, when I first started out, it was mainly Discraft and Innova. And Gateway, that was about it, you know. And then now there's so many disc companies out there and so many people making baskets and just apparel and just all these other accessories to go along with disc golf. I mean, all these companies, you know, dyeing disc. I mean, there's so many avenues you can take now to make a living off of disc golf other than just playing, you know. Especially like the brick and mortar. I never in my life thought I would see a brick and mortar store here in Trussville, Alabama, which in Dynamic Disc Iron City has four stores. We have one here in Trussville, one in Homewood, which is right by near the George Ward course. There's one down in Calera further south, and then there's one in Jasper also, which is within 40 minutes north of Birmingham. He has four stores now. It's like amazing.
Wow.
Things of that nature, and just just a lot of rule changes, obviously. There's been so many rule changes over the years. But I guess that's all I can really think. That, I mean, overall, the game itself hasn't changed that much. It's just, other than the competitors are so much better. These dudes now are so good. So amazing to watch them. I'm just blown away. That's why I tell my buddies and I play with them, you know, man, I wish I'd have had these disc technologies back when I was friggin' 20 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, I finally got a patent pending arrow, a couple of those, you know. So I was like, oh, I thought that was like, you can't get any better than this, you know. And it just seems like every year it gets better and better. And it's like, how much more difference can they make in the way a disc flies? But they seem to be doing it. But there's been some gimmicky stuff out there too. With, that used to be Quest A&T. They had all those gimmicky discs they came out with. They were almost like a leader in the design of disc golf. You know, cause I don't know if you're familiar with them. No, they were kind of in partners with Gateway. It was called Quest A&T. But they had like dimple technology in their discs, like golf balls. They started trying to incorporate that in to make the disc fly further and this, that, and the other. But that was pretty interesting stuff.
You mentioned just the level of players has gotten better. What do you think sets apart the best disc golf players from the rest?
I think, I won't say most of them, but I say a lot of the top golfers now, or they're just pure athletes, man. They're just athletes. They're just born athletes, or they have background in some other sports that just make them good at playing disc golf. You know, they're already disciplined in their mind. You know, they know what it takes because playing other sports, you know, having that discipline, I think is huge in being a great disc golfer, because you know what you got to do to get where you want to be.
Yeah, very true. You know, one thing before we got cut off, you were talking about doing field work, and you were talking about how your discs change, of course, you know, get beat in. Do you keep multiple discs of the same mold in your bag?
Actually, I do. Especially my swords. I'll keep a brand new sword in the bag, and then I have one that's kind of beat, it'll flip and fly straight, and I have one where I want it for a big turnover and hyzer shots. So I got three swords in the bag, and then I'll keep one fuse in the bag. This brand, I can't always keep a brand new fuse in the bag, and then my one that's kind of beat in that I can, because I'm not a big sidearm guy. So anybody that knows me knows that I throw a lot of turnover discs for my big Anheuser shot, so I throw a lot of flippy stuff for that instead, because I just don't have a good sidearm. I don't know why, but I and that was my primary shot in ultimate, you know, my little sidearm flick up the sideline. But I just, I'm good with my flicks, good for about 275 accurately, and then 300. But anything past that, I don't know where the hell it's gonna go. It just hurts my elbow, I guess. I don't know. That's why, you know, I just rely on turnover discs like the Underworld and the Hatchet and the Beat Sword. And they're just, I can do the same thing, throwing those discs as throwing a sidearm.
Do you have a set schedule for changing those discs out, or do you just kind of do it based on how they start acting?
I just based on, you know, I'll keep, you know, when I feel like it's time to take it out of the bag, I'll take it out, you know. Eventually, it'll turn into an easy little roller disc. And I'll try to, you know, rotate disc in and out to start work, you know, start working on getting the disc beat into where I want it, you know. And that's just
right.
I there's some disc I like new, but then some discs I'd rather have that's already got a little wear on them. That's why you find me picking a Dynamic Disc Iron City again. I go through there and pilfer through their used box all the time just to see if there's something there I might want. It's like, I picked up the fuse I use a lot at Worlds this past year. I picked it up out of their used box. You know, it was beat in just right to where I wanted it. And it's like, sweet. You know, I don't got to spend a year and a half trying to get this thing worked into where I want it. And a bounty. I got a bounty out of the box, too. Same thing. It was already beat to the point exactly where I wanted it, and I don't have to spend another like year getting it beat in or smacking it up against trees. So yeah, new discs have a place in my bag, but you know, then of course I like a good seasoned disc.
Now I think I might know the answer. We've been playing for a while. Do you have a most memorable win?
I don't know. You know, I have a lot of good memorable wins, I think. I guess I have more than one. I mean, obviously my first Worlds in 21 after trying for friggin' so many years to win one. That's my most memorable. Especially being unsponsored and being winning a Worlds being unsponsored, you know, because most of the time you hear about people winning Worlds, they're always sponsored. And I wasn't, which is kind of cool.
But now, yeah, that's the one I was thinking.
Yeah, most definitely. But then I think it was one of my other most memorable wins was, I think it was 2007 or 8 in Pawhucka, Oklahoma. It's where Avery Jenkins lives now, you know, that ranch, the ranch. They had a big NT event there, and it was the weather was horrible. I mean, it was raining, and I'm not exaggerating. The winds were just average, probably 30 miles an hour. There were friggin' tornadoes all around us. The winds were just howling all weekend, 30-mile-an-hour average, and it's gutting up to 50, and, I mean, it was just almost impossible to play in, but I was on the chase car, the second car on the last round, and Jeff Fiedler, good friend from California, and the McClellan brothers, Mitch and Clint McClellan, they were all on the lead card, and Jeff had me by 5 strokes going into that last round, and I think Mitch had me by 5 strokes, and I think Jeff had me by 4 strokes, but I, you know, in those conditions, I'm sitting there thinking, man, there's no way I'm gonna win this tournament. But I came back and won that tournament by 2 strokes. I made up 5 strokes, playing, and ended up winning by 2. And that was always a memorable moment for me. That was like my second ever NT win. I won like wow. Because it was crazy conditions, and it was cool too, because that's when Kevin McCoy and Courtney got married there. If you're familiar with that course, they got that little island out there. So it was just a big party that weekend for the wedding, and then some great disc golf, even in that crazy weather. But that's one that always sticks out in my mind, just coming back from 5 strokes in those conditions to win by mm-hmm. 2 was a good one. That was only my second ever NT win. And I won, like, I think it was 2 weeks earlier, I won my first NT event in Atlanta. The Atlanta Open, and then we traveled over there. So yeah, that one always sticks out in my mind. So
very cool. Now, outside of winning a tournament, would you have a favorite disc golf memory?
Oh man, memories! God, there's so many, man. So many. You know, one of my biggest memories was probably from disc golf. You know, not. Before, you know, I started really traveling and going and playing in big tournaments and stuff, and, you know, getting the Disc Golfer magazine and reading and seeing all the people in there, Kenny Climo and Barry Schultz and, you know, Juliana Corvore and Dan Felberg and all those guys, you know, the guys that were the pioneers of the touring disc golf guys. I went and played the Bell South Open in Bowling Green in 2006. For the first time, and they were, that was when it was a A-tier Super Tour events. That was the big event, you know. And I got to see all these people in for the first time in person. You know, I was just like in awe. I just was like, oh my God, there's Ken Climo and Barry Jones.
Oh, yeah.
And just seeing all these people in person, I was just mesmerized. And you know, so you sit there and read about them in the magazine all the time. So that's a cool moment I really cherish, is meeting all those guys for the first time.
Oh, that's very cool. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk. I enjoy talking to you. Is there anything else you'd like to like to add or say before we leave?
I like to say, hey, I do appreciate Westside giving me an opportunity to represent them, and I hope I made them proud and continue to make them proud, and looking forward to getting out there and slinging these discs as long as I can. You know, I truly enjoying it, just getting out and throwing discs, man. That's all I've done all my life, so I love it, and I'll play till I just can't play anymore. So. And I appreciate you having me on and giving me an opportunity to tell my story of my life, what little bit it is. But I appreciate you too, man. Just appreciate anybody that and everybody that's ever done anything for me to help me along the way. It's been a long journey, and I hope to continue to string it along.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Well, thank you so much for listening. This is the Westside Discussion Podcast. I want to say thank you again to Tim for coming on and to Putt Confidently. The theme song is What Would You Be Like by Kier the Don. We'll continue the discussion next time.